of the public to the May 10th, 2023 web-based and teleconference virtual plenary session of the Florida Building Commission. The focus of this meeting is to consider comments regarding model code updates to reference standards for the development of the draft Florida Building Code 8th edition 2023 and to receive an interim report from the University of Florida regarding their survey and investigation of buildings damaged by Hurricane Ian. As always, we will provide an opportunity for public comment on each of the commissioners' substantive discussion topics. If you would like to comment on a specific substantive commission agenda item, please wait until the facilitator invites members of the public to speak at the appropriate time. Public comment will be limited to 3 minutes per person. Public input is welcome, but should be offered before the commission begins discussion or there is a formal motion on the floor. With that, Mr. Campbell, would you conduct our roll call?
Sure, be happy to. Chairman Schock. Absent. Commissioner Beck.
Here.
Commissioner Beauray.
Present.
Commissioner Brown.
Present.
Commissioner Compton.
Here.
Commissioner Gross.
I'm here, Tom.
Thank you. Commissioner Hershberger.
Here.
Commissioner John.
Here.
Commissioner Langille.
I'm here.
Commissioner Marker. Commissioner Marrero. I saw him on.
Can you hear me?
Yep, I can hear. I can hear you now.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Sorry.
Commissioner Schiffer.
I'm on.
Commissioner Schilling.
Yes, I'm here.
Commissioner Swope.
Here.
Commissioner Tolbert.
Here.
He was. Yep, there he is. And Commissioner Wilcox.
I'm here.
All right. Thank you. And we have a quorum.
All right. Thank you, Tom. At this time, Mr. Campbell will review the agenda proposed for May's commission meeting.
All right. We are here to approve the regular procedural topics to conduct a rule development workshop for Rule 61G20-1.001 to review and accept the interim draft report for the survey and investigation of buildings damaged by Hurricane Ian, and to hear commissioner and public comment.
Is there a motion to approve the May 10th, 2023 agenda as presented and posted?
Schiffer will.
Second. We have a first and a second from Schiffer and Compton. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. The motion carries. Thank you. The commission voted during its May 14, 2023 meeting to take additional comments concerning model code updates to reference standards. The commission will now conduct a rule development workshop for the Florida Building Code 8th edition 2023 to consider comments it has received. Mr. Campbell will now explain the process, facilitate public comment, and subsequently the commission's consideration of public comments. Tom?
All right. The comments should be restricted to comments concerning model code updates to reference standards. Written comments that are relevant to the Commission's March 14th, 2023 request for additional comments will be considered first. Then other comments will be considered both written and verbal. I will introduce the comment and the recommendations of TAC, and we'll limit the comments to a maximum of 3 minutes per person. There will not be any rebuttals. proponent of the comment will speak first, and opponents of the public comment will follow the proponents. Please limit your comments and be concise. Do not read lengthy prepared statements. Offer new points or state agreement with previous speakers. Please do not repeat what's already been stated. We may terminate a comment if it is repeating previous comments. The commission does want to hear all perspectives, but does not want any repeats of the same views. Clarifying questions of commenters is restricted to commission members only. Staff, proponent, or the specified commenter will respond to a commission member's questions. Once a motion for action on a comment is on the floor, the discussion has been limited to commission members except as followed as allowed by the chair or the facilitator, which for this meeting is me. Motions require a 75% favorable vote for approval. Those with less than a 75% favorable vote are deemed not approved. So now we will go to our first comment, which is from Eric Stafford. It is requesting that ICC 500 and 600 be updated in the 8th edition of the code. This comment was just reviewed by 3 of tax and the residential construction cost impact work group. The residential construction cost impact were the work group, the structural tax, and the special occupancy tax all voted to approve the comment as submitted, while the roofing tax voted to approve the comment with the removal of Chapter 7 from ICC 600. Anybody have any questions about the tax recommendations? All right, so at this time, I'll turn it to Mr. Stafford to present his comment to the commission.
Thanks, Tom. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
All right. Again, Eric Stafford. I'll try to be brief because we talked about this was mentioned at the March committee meeting, and this is the follow up. Provided the links to the documents and an overview of some of the changes. And as I mentioned the last time, this relates to updating ICC 500, which is the standard for storm shelter design. The 2014 edition is referenced in the code right now, and then also updating ICC 600, which is a prescriptive standard for building residential constructions by cookbook method, more or less. I got an overview from Kim Parberg with some of the key changes in ICC 500 and listed some of the key changes in 600. As I mentioned at the meeting before, it was really a quirk in the system that these standards didn't get updated, or not necessarily updated, but did get brought forward as updates for this cycle. And it was brought to my attention, particularly about ICC 500, with some of the FEMA work that I do, that if Florida doesn't have, not adopting the latest version of ICC 500, that there could be potential problems with some grants. FEMA often grants, FEMA requires using the latest version of codes available. So that's what really kind of started this. Now, the tax, there got to be some discussions about you know, conflicts with 600, not 500. I don't think there's any opposition to updating 500, and there really no opposition to 600, but concerns with conflicts with the roofing chapter. Don't have a problem with adding additional limitations on them. The only point I would argue is that those conflicts exist now. We're just existing. We're referencing the 2014 version of 600 instead of the 2020. And also point out that section R301.2.1.1 in the residential code, which is what 600 applies to, is residential buildings. It specifically says that they can only be that it can only be used for masonry and concrete wall construction. Wouldn't allow it for roof construction, for roofs or for siding or any other items. You know, as the way it's written now. But that being said, if the commission wishes to put additional limitations on it, see no problems with that at all. Urge you to support this comment and apologize again for being so late in the process. Thank you.
All right. Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak in support of the proposed change in Eric Stafford's comment?
Belcher.
Sure. Anyone else? Okay, Joe, floor is yours.
Joe Belcher, Florida Home Builders Association. We support adoption of both standards unmodified. The code does limit the use of ICC 600 to concrete and masonry. It's very clear in the code. If somebody were to have a conflict, their conflict is they're not reading the code correctly. So we recommend approval as proposed. Thank you.
Do we have anybody who would like to make a comment opposed to the modification as it was submitted?
Yes, Tom, this is Mike Silvers with FRSA. And again, we're not opposed to the adoption at all. We do have some concerns that Chapter 7 in ICC 600 has prescriptive methods for roofing that are not allowed in the Florida Building Code. And even though there is that section saying that the ICC 600 only applies to masonry walls, there's been some opinion, including from the staff, that is not necessarily so. Our concern is that someone could reference and use this for a specification that a roof should meet the requirements or a building of ICC 600, and a contractor follow that without the understanding that they have to actually not follow that section, but to follow the Florida Building Code instead. So our suggestion was to eliminate to give an exception to Chapter 7 in ICC 600, which is the roofing section, and thereby hopefully eliminate any conflict with the Florida Building Code. As the Commission knows, we've adopted multiple changes, and many of those meant to correlate the building section, the residential section, and existing building. And this is one more, and of course, we don't have the option to correlate these because they are adopted in total as a reference standard. So we would urge you to adopt both standards with the exception of Chapter 7 in ICC 600. Thank you.
Do we have anyone else who would like to speak in opposition to the proposed change as it was submitted? Does any member of the commission have any clarifying questions? And I'd like to add that staff agrees with FHBA and Eric Stafford on this, that we, well, I think Mr. Stafford wasn't opposed to the amendment, that we think it should be adopted as is and as it appears in the comment without any modifications. The code already narrows the scope of ICC 600 to just the walls, as Mr. Belcher said. So I wanted to let you know. And then if you have any clarifying questions for staff, I'm sure we'll be happy to answer them as well. All right. So again, any clarifying questions from commissioners? All right. Do we have a motion?
Yeah, I got a motion. It's Brian Smoke. I'll make a motion that we adopt 500 as is and 600 without the Chapter 7 in it.
All right. Do we have a second to Commissioner Swope's motion? Is there a second to his motion?
Betts, second.
All right. Commissioner Betts, second. We will call a roll call vote because we know we had some disagreement from the tax as well. So we've got a motion and a second and a second. Is there any additional discussion on the motion?
Okay. No, it's Brian Swope. I'll add a little to it. I mean, if it's something that I can see where it can, you know, potentially add conflict down the line, both in the roofing TAC meeting and just, you know, Eric Stafford's alluded to the fact that there's you know, potential conflicts in it now. If it's not going to relate to roofing, and the 600 can pass without it, and it's not going to make any changes to it or the efficiency of it, and there's a way to eliminate confusion down the road, that's my main reason for. I have no problem with the document, just trying to eliminate confusion down the road.
Okay. Any other discussion, comment from staff, anything else? Otherwise, we'll go for the vote. We will go to Commissioner Betts.
Yes.
Commissioner Brown.
No.
Commissioner Compton. Commissioner Compton. Commissioner Gross.
Yes.
Commissioner Hershberger.
Yes.
Commissioner John.
Yes.
Commissioner Langille.
Yes.
Commissioner Marrero.
Yes.
Commissioner Schiffer.
Yes.
Commissioner Schilling.
Yes.
Commissioner Swope.
Yes.
Commissioner Tolbert.
No.
Commissioner Wilcox.
No.
All right. And Commissioner Compton.
Yes.
Are you a no or a yes on eliminating it? I'll take that as a yes. All
right. Tom, I think you missed Commissioner Beret.
Oh, yep. And coming back to you as well. I'm sorry. And Commissioner.
Appreciate that. No, I'm a no.
You're a no. All right. So we got 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 10 yeses, and 1, 2, 3, 4. I have the vote at 10 to 4. Does my staff have that as well?
Yes, that's what I had.
Yeah.
All right. Then.
For my calculation, it looks like there needed to be 11 in order for it to pass.
Yep, we needed 11 of 14, so that motion fails. Do we have an alternative motion?
Brown moves approval of the comments as presented.
Is there a second?
Beret seconds.
Okay, we'll do the same thing again. Commissioner Betts.
Yes.
Commissioner Brown.
Yes.
Commissioner Compton.
Yes.
Commissioner Gross.
Yes.
Commissioner Hershberger.
Yes.
Commissioner John.
Yes.
Commissioner Langille?
Yes.
Commissioner Marrero?
Yes.
Commissioner Sheffer?
Yes.
Commissioner Schilling?
Yes.
Commissioner Swope?
Yes.
Was that a yes?
That was a yes.
Okay. Commissioner Tolber?
Yes.
And Commissioner Wilcox?
Yes.
All right. That is unanimous. That is unanimous. So that motion does to our Commissioner Barrett. Going back to you.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm a yes.
You're a yes. So again, that makes the vote unanimous for approval as amended in Parliament and published by ICC. That will take us to our next comment on the agenda from Mr. Soto. Mr. Soto, are you on the line? Mr. Soto, can you hear us?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yep, I can hear. I can hear you now. I took you off mute. So,
okay.
We will give you your 3 minute. Your 3 minutes to present. And just give me 1 second to get that queued up. Does anybody from staff want to make a comment on this one? Before we hear from Mr. Soto.
I could speak after if you want, or now.
I think after will be fine. All right. And Mr. Soto, I'm going to start your 3 minutes right now, so you can begin.
Thank you. I want to say thanks to staff and to commissioners for considering my comment. I understand it's very late in the process, so if we cannot do nothing now, cannot do anything now, to adopt this change, maybe you can help me with a process for maybe for the glitches or any other option. Assuming that the commission already read the email and the comments and the reasoning behind this proposal, and that's all I have to say. Really, thank you. Thank you again for your time.
Any member of the Department of the Public Library like to make a comment in support of the proposed modification? Anyone in the public like to make a comment against the proposed modification in Mr. Soto's comment? All right, then that'll take us back to the commissioners. Commissioners, do you have any clarifying questions for staff or Mr. Soto? Does Justin or Mo want to make a comment before we go to the TAC for a moment for a motion?
Yeah, this is Mo Mugani. Okay, Justin, if you want to speak, fine.
Well, yeah, I'm happy to speak. Commissioners, the answer to Mr. Soto's question, unfortunately, is yes, it is too late to be taking up these modifications or this proposed modification. This would require the full notice for sort of our phase two level of operations. The only reason the commission's even going through the prior review of the ICO changes, because those were model code changes that were essentially missed during phase one of our triennial update. And so I think that staff can work with Mr. Soto to try to come up with a strategy for presenting this in future updates to the code, but that it would not be appropriate to take it up at this time.
All right. Any commissioners have any questions for staff? All right. Commissioners, do we have a motion for the comment?
Moved to deny. We had a
second.
Compton and John.
Yes.
A motion to deny. All right, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? All right, that finishes up that. So, Commissioner Ray, I think we're ready for the overall motion at the end of this section.
Very good. Thank you, Tom. If there is no further discussion, commissioners, is there a motion to proceed with rulemaking for Rule 61G20-1.0011, Florida Building Code adopted, incorporating all approved amendments, and to delegate authority to Thomas Campbell to sign rulemaking documents on behalf of the commission?
Brown would move approval.
Brown and Compton. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. The motion carries. Thank you, commissioners. We're going to move to item number four. Each year, the commission authorizes the University of Florida to conduct a survey and investigation of buildings damaged by a category 3, 4, or 5 hurricane. This year, the commission authorized the University of Florida to conduct a survey and investigation of buildings damaged by Hurricane Ian. The University of Florida is here to give the commission an update on the progress of their investigation.
I am. This is Dr. Privat at the University of Florida.
Go ahead, Dr. Privat.
Okay, good afternoon. On behalf of myself and also Dr. David Roosh at Auburn University, we will be presenting the interim report to the commission. I am unable to get my screen going, but Dr. Roosh, if you could upload or share your screen. I'm not sure if we have permissions for doing that yet.
Not yet. Let me see. There we go.
So basically, I will introduce the work that we have been doing to date, pass it over to Dr. Roosh, who will give you some of the details, and then I will conclude with a couple of closing comments and then open it up to the commission and the public for comments. So the first slide is the principal investigators are myself, Professor Kurt Gurley at the University of Florida, and Dr. David Roosh. Next slide, please. And a very brief agenda, it shouldn't take that long. We have been working with this in the past, and so we'll just, I will give a brief overview of the deployment, the initial triage, and the formal surveys that we have done. This is ongoing work for probably over 10 or 15 years, and I think we're getting better at it, unfortunately, because hurricanes continue to occur. But I think it's really of benefit to the commission and to the people of Florida. And then Dr. Roosh will provide you with the data enrichment of the reconnaissance and some of the knowledge that we are already seeing from that. I will conclude with a summary and some questions. Next slide, please. So these are the stats. Making landfall as a category 4 on KO Costa. In Florida, maximum sustained wind speeds of 150 miles per hour. This is more deadly than it appears. The effort that has happened really was, or the damage was really caused by the peak surge inundation, and resulting in a rather high $113 billion in losses. Of the fatalities, over 50% have been by people who are 70 years and older, 60% of the deaths were by drowning and 13% due to lack of medical access from our medical examiner's commission. Next slide, please. We have done this work in collaboration and using a lot of federal sources and other sources, and this is one of them whereby we're looking at the peak gust wind speeds based upon a lot of assets throughout the state. When we look closely at this, next slide please, what we will notice is that the area most affected was affected by wind speeds of 130 miles per hour or less. Okay. That is not to say that just because the wind speeds were reduced that the storm surge would have been reduced. That has other factors which caused it to be so devastating for us. Most of these structures here are in areas that have a higher design wind speed based upon the Florida Building Code. Next slide. And so let me, after this, we have had two triage assessments and then a formal survey in the October, end of October period. After this, I will turn it over to Dr. Roosh for the data enhancement and where we are at present.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Rott. Can everybody hear me okay?
Yep.
All right. So moving on, before we jump into the data enhancement, I just wanted to mention just a couple of illustrative case studies just to illustrate the data that we're working with and then some of the observations that I'm sure many of you have seen as well. But I'll start with just a couple of illustrative case studies about the importance of the freeboard elevation to survivability. This was, again, shown in our interim report, but these were a few homes on Estero Island in the just south of the Fort Myers Beach area for figures A and B there at the top. You know, older 1950s home elevated just a couple of feet off the ground and in an area that saw up to 17 feet of storm surge relative to a mean sea level NAMDI 88 datum, and so no surprise there to see that destruction. Unfortunately, moving down to image C there, this is a pre-event view, and then image D is the post-event view from the street view data collection from STEER, and. You know, these two homes were both constructed in the 1950s, and yet, and one is completely washed away. One had a successful breakaway wall performance, lots of cladding loss, building envelope damage, but the structure itself stayed intact. Again, indicating the importance of the freeboards' survivability, but also illustrating, in a broader scale, what is it that we actually want from our structures? I mean, yes, the one on the right technically survived structurally, but is that, I'm sure it was a complete rebuild and a total loss. And so what performance goals do we actually want from an event like this? This is perhaps a broader discussion. Moving on, another illustrative case study. This is in Sanibel and just illustrating some of the differences that we're seeing in the performance beyond just the structure itself and relating to the impact of the extended setback and then vegetation that's present in Sanibel. This area, based upon the high water marks that were collected by the USGS as well as the STEER teams that went out, indicated, again, surge levels of, 12 to 15 feet above, again, the NAVD 88 vertical datum. So a little bit less than what was in Fort Myers Beach, but not substantially. And yet there tended to be much better performance from a surge perspective here in Sanibel. And I think a big part of that was the more extended setback as well as the vegetation and other things that are helping to dissipate that wave impact energy. So, again, preliminary observation, perhaps anecdotal, but looking at these things in more detail. A few more. These are some examples of performance of breakaway walls, each of these on the Fort Myers Beach, Estero Island area. Before and after views up in the top A and B, seems to be a successful performance of the breakaway walls with clean failures and no residuals left, whereas the ones on the bottom used the CMU breakaway walls, unreinforced CMU breakaway walls, and you can see a partial failure. However, there was still significant portions of that wall still standing, which would have added lateral load to the building that perhaps it was not designed to withstand. In this case, the building overall was able to still stay intact, but illustrative of some potential issues that may need to be looked at. And this is just some general illustrations of some of the other effects that we're trying to quantify in our data set here, and that includes scour and uplift on hydrodynamic uplift on the underside of the structures, washing away some of the slabs and things like that, free damming and transport. We're trying to quantify some of those effects as much as we can to tie into some of the latest changes to ASC 722 on floods and so forth. While Ian was predominantly a storm surge event, at least from, you know, in terms of the catastrophic damage and what the sort of the news media tended to focus on, the wind effects were quite far-reaching as well, even though, as Dr. Voss showed earlier, these were our best estimates of the wind speeds were well below design levels, and yet we still see some structural failures, not widespread. Here's a couple of examples on more towards to the north on the barrier islands, where you can see some significant structural damage to the roof structure, lots of wall cladding loss as well. Both of these homes showed in at the top, A and B, are both sort of right on the coast, so that it would see some enhanced wind speeds there due to the exposure, perhaps. But they're, again, not widespread, but they're certainly isolated instances of those types of failures. Down at the bottom, again, you know, garage door framing failure, some more structural failure as well. These are kind of 1960s, 70s, 80s homes, so not our modern construction. Moving a little bit more inland, this is in the Port Charlotte area, and this is actually one of the areas that saw some of the highest wind speeds, at least estimated by the ARA NIST model. This is around, check my notes here, so around 125 miles an hour for these aerial images shown in the subsets A and D. And so you can see a mixture of roof cover loss there. Lots of shingle damage to other roof material types as well, but a lot of disparity in the performance as well, where you have some homes with, you know, 30, 40, 50% or more of the roof cover gone, and then others adjacent to it with very little evidence of damage at all. So we're trying to quantify this in more detail as well. Lastly here for these illustrative case studies, to be material agnostic, certainly we've seen failures in metal roofs, we've seen failures in asphalt shingles, failures in tile systems as well. So these are some homes in the Punta Gorda area, again, an area that based on our peak wind speed maps would have seen right around that 125 to 130 miles an hour peak 3-second gust, and see some isolated cases of damage to tile roofs as well. So one of the things that we're trying to do, we could go on and on sort of picking out, you know, anecdotal or illustrative case studies, but we think it's important to also have an idea of what the representative performance is. So doing more of a non-biased statistical survey and quantifying probabilities or failure rates. And so to do that, conducted a stratified sampling strategy over the region of impact that includes Lee and Charlotte counties for the most part. And we started with what I'm calling the on-site assessment candidates, which was a collection of about 250 structures where we have detailed on-site forensic photographs of that allow us to quantify some of the attributes we're interested in more detail. So that's what's shown in the kind of the greenish blue color there. Then we've also done, a stratified sort of random sample apart from that to help build out the data set and try to get as representative we can across the different construction eras and hazard intensities and occupancies and so on to be as representative as we can. So to kind of walk you through this and give you an idea, so the numbers that are shown here represent both those on-site assessments as well as the additional virtual assessments that we're going to conduct. But again, we tried to stratify across occupancy, proximity to high water marks so that we have a good idea of what the storm surge hazard was for as many of the homes as we could as well. Again, the construction era broken down by the Florida Building Code addition that was enforced at the time, as well as the peak wind speed. And so you can see those breakdowns there, and you know, we're somewhat limited by the data that we have access to in terms of being able to sample representatively across all of these, but we're trying to do our best to stratify that proportionally. So to give you an idea, I know that this is a lot of text and maybe a little bit small, but these are also included in the interim reports if you want to look at it in more detail. But this just gives you an idea of the type of data that we're trying to collect for each of our assessments. And so this includes a collection of different attributes that are should be relevant to the performance, including, for example, the number of stories and the elevation to the lowest horizontal structural member. Also, whether it's located inside or outside of the coastal construction control line, what wall cladding type are used, roof cover, et cetera. But then also damage, some of the more precise damage attributes as well. So kind of component level, percentage of, you know, wall sheeting or percentage of roof structure that's damaged or missing, but also some more global damage indicators, such as whether it's shifted off the foundation, whether there's evidence of debris impact damming or flood slab uplift, performance of the breakaway walls, and things like that. So hopefully this will be a comprehensive data set with lots of lessons to be learned from it. In terms of sources, Dr. Vaught alluded to this a little bit earlier. In order to do these virtual assessments, we are taking advantage of a wealth of data that's out there, some collected by SEER, some collected by the counties, and others collected from federal sources. So these are, there's a variety of imagery sources, pre- and post-event, street-level, panoramic imagery, aerial imagery, both from NOAA as well as the NSF NERI Rapid Experimental Facility. We have both aerial and oblique views from pictometry through accessing through the Lee County property appraisal website, hazard intensities, design wind speeds and base flood elevation from AFD 7 and then from the FEMA firm maps, and then building attributes from the Lee County and Charlotte County property appraisal data sets, building footprints from Microsoft as well as Lee County, elevation certificates. The USGS has simulated, I guess, the data itself was collected by the state of Florida or the counties in different ways, but they have 3D LIDAR point clouds of most of the affected areas that we can use to get digital surface models and 3D geometry of the structures before the hurricane. So lots of data that we have access to without, you know, even necessarily having to be on site for all of these, and we can collect a lot of these attributes that we're needing to condition the study on. So this just gives you an overview of some of the imagery sources and as an example. So up at the top, A, B, and C there, these are all sort of images of the same area. The top left is the NOAA. Again, top-down aerial imagery, it's the earliest imagery we have access to. But it's also, but it's also not quite as high resolution. B there is the rapid, the NERI rapid, again, top down the deer aerial imagery, very high resolution. But as you can see, comparing B and C, there's been quite a bit of cleanup that's already occurred at that time. And when then C is the pictometry of weak imagery that we have access to through the county itself. And so each of these become useful in different ways, and we're sort of aggregating the different information together to get a complete picture of performance. Then, of course, the bottom there in subset D is the before and after, the street view imagery platform that you may have seen already or used before if you want access to it. We've got, again, over 600 miles of imagery collected throughout the affected areas, and if you'd like to have access to that, just let me know. So with that, I'll just mention that first bullet here. I'll address that and then turn it over back over to Dr. Bravat. So we're working hard to go through this data enhancement analysis on what's ultimately about almost 1,000 structures. I'm getting pinged by students even in the meeting, even in this meeting, you know, asking various questions, clarifying things as they go through it. So we're working hard on it. We're probably about 80% at this stage through that process. We'll have a little bit of QC work to do after that. So we're making good progress. And I think we'll have a useful report to the commission when we submit that in June. And with that, I'll turn it back over to Dr. Bravat.
Okay. Thanks all for that. You know, in summary, I think, you know, we have worked, and I keep saying this, thank you so much to the Florida Building Commission for working on behalf of the Florida residents to do what we are doing. You know, the fact that we have 1,000 structures, some virtual, some forensically there, it's still a small sample size to what has occurred, right? If it's just a broad look, we're nearly at 190,000 structures, so we're just 0.5%. So hence the reason why we have to take this degree of care and, you know, meshing together as many sources as possible to try to understand what is the damage ratio, what the percentage of damages, and trying to isolate by year, by era of building code, or by location, by damage intensity. Because ultimately what we intend for this result to use is to extrapolate it over this larger numbers. Okay. You know, there is long-term value in the Florida Building Commission from the very first results done by Kurt Gurley and Forrest Masters, where, you know, after the 2004 hurricanes, we showed that there is statistically significant improvement in the performance of buildings built in accordance with the Florida Building Code. Every year that improves, every aspect of the work that you're doing is important. Just looking at the wealth of the data from 2006 to today, one of the questions in my head is there a way to now start making more geographically related comparisons across the state of Florida? Assuming that we have a statewide building code, there should be no differences. But just based on having where Hurricane Michael happened in the Panhandle, Hurricane Matthew on the East Coast, Ian on the West Coast, etc., and Hurricane Irma all along the Keys, I just wondered, and this is maybe more of an academic question for me rather than something that you will want to do, but, you know, ultimately that is something that would be important. I wanted to also help you understand where next this work is going. There are damage loss predictive models that are being developed, and I just wanted to propose two of those just so that you know that it exists. Next slide, please. Okay. You know, full disclosure, I am a co-PI on the CHAIR project here out of University of Delaware, but essentially this is trying to develop an analytical solution or framework whereby policymakers can be better informed in terms of what the resilience, the building performance resilience, economic prosperity and equity in the face of climate change. And this work is more of a research entity at present, but just like HAZAS MH, ultimately it will get into the hands of people who use it for multiple purposes. And next slide, Dave. Another one is the Center for Risk-Based Community Resilience Planning supported by NIST. It is out of Colorado State University in Colorado. And they have essentially the same premise to do these kind of future-looking presentations. As of this time, the majority of the work that we are doing at Florida are one of the few that enables empirical validation and calibration of these models. And as a result of that, it has an outsized importance in terms of getting these things right from the beginning. Okay, next slide. So with that, thanks so much for your time. Dave and I would be happy to take any questions and comments you have regarding the interim report.
Commissioners, if you have a comment or question, please state your name. I will stack a list, and then we will work through the list. Any commissioners with a comment or question?
Brown has a question.
Okay, Brown. Anybody else? All right, Commissioner Brown, the floor is yours.
Yes, thank you. Dr. Pravat, I remember several years ago, you did a research project that attempted to catalog construction techniques that were currently available in the marketplace that were, as of that date, not a part of the building code. I would be curious, since you've already indicated that the value of the code can be statistically significant. We know that the code works. We know that it works well. It's one of the best. Do you have an opinion that's supported by the observations that you've made in this most recent storm about whether or not there's still value in those other techniques that we are not currently incorporating into the code? Would it have made a difference? And if so, do you have any ability to offer an opinion about quantifying those differences?
Okay, what a wonderful question. Thanks. I'll say a few words, and then Dave, I will open the floor for you to make your comment. But for the commissioners, you know, that is an important study whereby we looked at what is in the code at the time, I believe, and maybe before 2016, 2017, and what sort of a code plus level might be. I think it would be interesting to look at that. I do not know if we have sufficient data for pulling out code plus criteria. Particularly, we can do it on the limited 250 forensic buildings that we actually looked at, but I'm not sure if we could do it on the broader data set. Dave?
If I'll just add to that, I don't think I was on that previous study to be familiar with all the ins and outs of the different enhanced construction methods. But I think one, you know, interesting part of this could be, you know, if we look at these damage patterns in a broader scale, you know, it may be easy for us to look at them and say, okay, we're doing pretty good. And I think we, as a whole, we are doing pretty good in terms of performance, but there's still a lot of damage that occurs when you extrapolate this over, as Dr. Foss showed earlier, you know, hundreds and thousands of buildings. And so, you know, what could be interesting then is when we look at sort of compile these final damage statistics about the rate of, you know, structural failures and roof cover loss. Obviously, it's much harder to get the interior losses, rain ingress, things like that are a big part of it. But it could be done to then look at those statistics and then go back to that list of kind of code plus construction and see, would these have addressed these issues, and are we seeing these issues still in modern code compliance structures. So I think there could be some value in it, that at least at a broader level, higher level, it would be an interesting study.
Commissioner Brown, I think I will meet with you or try to at least include some look back at that previous study and see what we can pull out from the data we have.
Well, my interest is simple. That is, I think we universally agreed that the Florida Building Code is a good one. And it serves people well. It's got a quantifiable benefit, significant benefit. But I don't want to see us leave money on the table, so to speak, leave opportunities on the table to continue to improve outcomes, particularly in those cases when the improvements are very economical to make. So any information that you can provide about how those improvements would improve the outcomes. I would be very interested in that.
Okay, I think so. So you know, the other side of that coin is, yes, things will improve, but what is the cost of doing those retrofits in existing construction as opposed to the new construction? So yeah, we'll take a look at that. Thank you.
Does anyone from the public have any questions or comments that they would like to make?
This is Arlene Stewart.
Arlene? Hold on, Arlene. Anybody else, too? I want to get the list and we'll work through it. Anyone else? All right. The floor is yours.
Thank you very much. If I could ask you to go back to slide 21, you had mentioned about how this, you know, why this was an important study and how it was different. Would you mind repeating that? Because I know you said it was important, but I didn't fully grasp what we're doing, you're doing, that's different.
Okay. So, Arlene, very good question here. Maybe the big difference here is that this project is, you know, in seven figures. It's a five-year project, probably supported by NIST at $20 million for the first 5 years and another $20 million for the next 5 years. So they are trying to wrap their hands around how communities actually understand how to adapt policy. They started with using the Joplin tornado of 2011, and have looked at hurricane issues, other tornadoes, and even earthquakes. But whereas we are looking here on behalf of the Florida Building Commission at the performance of specific buildings and trying to figure out how that is converted into losses, I think these playbooks and in-cores and are trying to marry many more things of the entire community. How does, for instance, the performance of buildings get influenced by the level of insurance? What are the differences that one might have if the state government does this policy incentive or this tax incentive, if the federal government does this, if the regional government does that? And also trying to look at the wherewithal of the community households themselves, how economically viable some of these retrofits may actually be in the long run. So it sort of is based on starting with a damage loss model, but then trying to integrate into a larger framework for predicting what a community might look like in, say, 30, 50, 60 years time with some, you know, predicted number of hurricanes of particular sizes.
Thank you for clarifying that. I was a little worried about insurance. Do you know if they are separating out or looking together losses to life versus losses to assets?
Arlene, I do not know, and it is an important thing. I can find out for you, but I have no idea.
Thank you very much.
All right, anybody else have any questions about the interim report? All right, back to you, Chairman.
All right, thank you. Let me just say thank you, Dr. Pravat and Dr. Ruscha, for your hard and diligent work on this topic. With that, if there's no further discussion, commissioners, is there a motion to accept the University of Florida's interim report for the survey and investigation of buildings damaged by Hurricane Ian?
Sure.
Do we have a second?
Second, John.
We have a first and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 All those opposed, same sign. The motion carries. Thank you, commissioners. We're going to move on to item number five. The commission welcomes your comments on its actions or any other topic under the commissioner's purview and authority. Public comment will be limited to 3 minutes per person. If you wish to speak, please identify your name when Tom asks, and he will stack a list of names for public comment. Tom?
All right. Do we have any comments from the public? Any comments or questions from any commissioners? All right. I think we're ready to move on.
All right. Thank you, Tom. With that, we're at the point where if there's no further business, we stand adjourned. Commissioners, thank you very much for your time. Staff, thank you for all your hard work.
Thanks, everybody.
Guys, thanks.